How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Good night, and good luck.
Hi, folks, and welcome back to the Lincoln Project Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Wilson, and I am joined today by my friend and colleague at Vote Riders, of which I, full disclosure, am a board member. Vote Riders, Lauren Kunis, who's the executive director of Vote Riders. And I wanted to have Lauren on today because Vote Riders is doing something that is on the absolute front line of protecting and preserving Americans' right to vote. The country over the last few years, from one party, have tried to ratchet down the ability of American citizens to exercise the franchise. They've tried to make it harder and harder over and over again by requiring increasingly difficult voter ID requirements in the states. Vote Riders is the solution to that. Lauren is the executive director and has implemented the Vote Rider strategy in a number of states around the country and runs our national operations. Lauren, thank you so much for coming on the Lincoln Project podcast today. In a more articulate way than I could manage, tell us what the mission of Vote Riders is, and then let's dive in on the work that's happening around out in the states.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for the invitation and for your service to Vote Riders. So Vote Riders is a national nonpartisan voting rights organization that is focused on the issue of voter ID. So we run nationwide voter education programs and provide free direct voter ID assistance to any eligible voter who needs it to get the ID that they need to cast a ballot in their state. We have been at this work since 2012. And I wish I had better news to share, but unfortunately, our work is more important today than it ever has been before. Voter ID laws have been skyrocketing and proliferating across the country since we were founded in 2012, with a particular jump up since the 2020 election. And I'm sure we'll dive more into the reasons behind that later on today. But voter ID laws are now in place in 38 states across the country, more than ever before as we head into 2024. So we have been full steam year-round, day in and day out, doing everything we can to make sure that Americans know about changing voter ID laws in their state and have what they need to cast a ballot that counts. And that is our mission that we're privileged to carry out every single day. We want to make sure that voter ID laws do not keep any eligible voter from having a voice in our democracy.
Now, a lot of the states, the argument they will make is we're trying to keep illegal aliens from voting and non-eligible citizens from voting, and therefore we have to require these ID requirements. But those ID requirements have become, it's not just like go down and pop in and get a driver's license anymore in the most of these places. It's become much more difficult with the documents they demand, the level they want to hit. It's harder in a lot of these states to get a voter ID card than a driver's license these days. Talk to us about just how bad it's gotten, especially in some of the more egregious examples in the states.
Absolutely. So millions of Americans lack an ID, and it is not easy to get one. Right. I can say that from our personal firsthand experience. We have a team of 30 fanned out across the country, working in strict voter ID states, as well as thousands of volunteers. All of us have probably avoided a trip to the DMV. We know it takes time. It costs money. Oftentimes, the voters we assist don't just need a driver's license or a state ID card. They need an underlying document, like a Social Security card or a birth certificate. They need a marriage or divorce certificate to back up their name change, for example. Right. We recently worked with the Brennan Center, the Center for Democracy and Civic Engagement at the University of Maryland, and PublicWise to do the first national study on voter ID access in almost 20 years. And we found that almost 15% of voting age American citizens lacks an ID that had their current name and address on it or lacked an ID at all. So this is, you know, you get married and change your name, you move across town, but you don't feel like updating your driver's license. In an increasing number of states, that is going to be either a direct or indirect barrier to casting a ballot. And to your first part of the question as well, voter ID laws are set up to solve a problem that literally does not exist. So voter ID laws, hypothetically, I hate even giving oxygen to this statement.
Right.
But voter ID laws are hypothetically set up to serve in to prevent in-person fraud at the polls. That is vanishingly rare. It's so vanishingly rare that, like, when we get an instance of it or two, it is
it's headlines.
And it makes the news because it's hilarious, but it is so inconsequential that it does not even matter. And when it comes to non-citizen voting in federal elections, again, that is a phenomenon that does not exist. But what we know from this same recent research is that putting in place requirements to show citizenship, to register to vote or to vote, would disenfranchise tens of millions of Americans who don't have documentary proof of citizenship readily available. So this is a phenomenon of legislation that is solving for a problem that doesn't exist and creating a huge problem in the process.
That whole underpinning of this fear-mongering about voter fraud and about illegal aliens voting and all these other things, I've written about this and studied this for years. And folks, I'm from Florida. It is one of the places where if there was going to be voter fraud at scale, we'd do it. Because Florida is what it is. It doesn't exist. It's onesie-twosie stuff in Miami where some guy gets his cousin's voter reg and votes twice. It's weird stuff at the Villages where Trump supporters vote in their home state and then they vote at the Villages where they have their retirement home. And so it's de minimis. It's a small ball problem. But an awful lot of this, you know, and we have to speak the truth about what it is. An awful lot of this, they don't want, it's not that they don't want illegal aliens voting. They don't think that really exists either. A lot of this is because older and African-American voters lack the same infrastructure of paperwork and proof of residence and proof of citizenship and the Social Security cards and all those other things that many other Americans have. And the side that's pushing these laws understands that very clearly. Talk to us a bit about what are some of the communities and places in the country that have the worst problems of this and that simultaneously have bad voter ID laws?
Absolutely. So what our research found is that many of the communities that are already underrepresented at all levels of our electorate and in society and in political leadership are the most likely to lack the form of ID that is increasingly required to vote. So age was actually the single most powerful predictor right. of whether or not someone had an updated state ID card or driver's license with their current name and address on it. And particularly the youngest slice of the electorate. So 18 to 19-year-olds lacked ID at far higher rates than even their slightly older, it feels weird to say older for a 20-year-old, but their older peers ages 20 to 24.
Let me interrupt you for one second. Is part of that because the younger generation are less likely to drive?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's part of it. So there's been a ton of research that's really interesting that shows that with, you know, Uber and Lyft readily available, or, you know, increasing urbanization, or for whatever reason, maybe, you know, when I was a teenager, I had to drive to see my friends, but now teenagers can text them. So there are a lot of different reasons for why young people are less likely to drive. Also, young people are far more transient. So it's not just people who don't have an ID, but also, you know, I was born in Ohio, but I go to college in Wisconsin. So a lot of young people, because they move more frequently for educational or are just generally in a more transient stage in life, don't have documentation that speaks to their current address. So young people are very hard hit and harmed by voter ID laws. Black voters, Hispanic voters, even elderly voters. Our research found that age 80 plus lacked ID at really high rates because they, again, for health reasons, are less likely to drive or haven't gone through the hassle of going to the DMV.
Right.
We also unsurprisingly find that low-income individuals people who self-identify as having a disability, women who change their name when they marry, trans and non-binary folks, the list goes on and on. But the sort of key takeaway is that underrepresented groups who are marginalized and already are not asserting their full power at the ballot box are most harmed by voter ID laws. Vote Riders is a nonpartisan organization. I'm not here to assign motive. I got you. I know someone.
I'll do that for you. Don't worry.
Someone who's great at that, and he should totally do that. But I will say, you know, voter ID laws can easily be weaponized. They are a way to sort of demographically gerrymander the electorate and say, I like how gun owners vote. So I will say a handgun permit is an accepted form of ID at the polls. But students might not swing my way. So let's strike student ID from the list of accepted forms of identification.
Right.
So they're a really powerful tool in the toolbox for politicians who want to make it harder to vote writ large, but harder for specific communities to cast a ballot.
Are there any states that have managed to undo some of these things? Or are there states that have a pathway for ID for these more vulnerable and less empowered groups of people that are a good role model, that are a good exemplar for how we should be doing this? And look, and again, as you know, when I started talking to you guys about joining the board, I wanted to make sure that we were, you know, an organization that was going that I believe the integrity of elections is a vital thing. But it's got to be the real stuff, not the fake stuff that a lot of these laws are based on. Are there states that are doing this right, where they're saying, okay, we're going to make sure that this 85-year-old grandma who doesn't drive anymore, you know, can go out and still cast a vote? Are there states that help people more effectively and that we should be looking at as an example?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great question. I was just in Detroit last week and speaking with organizations on the ground in Michigan. And Michigan is a great example of a state that does have a voter ID law. But as far as ID laws go, it is more inclusive and makes casting a ballot more accessible for more people. So they have lots of different options for what you can present at the polls. And they also have a very simple way to cast a regular ballot if for whatever reason you don't have an ID or you forgot to bring it, and they don't ask questions, and you can still cast a regular ballot and have it counted by signing a simple form.
Basic provisional.
Exactly. But not even a provisional ballot, because a provisional, you'd have to take extra steps to make it count.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then you can cast a regular ballot. Virginia is another example. Other states with sort of varying levels of strictness have ways for voters without an accepted form of ID to still cast a ballot at the polls. And in speaking to groups on the ground in Michigan, they say they really appreciate that. You know, their messaging is, if you have an ID, bring it. But if you do not, that's okay too, and do not stay home on election day.
Right.
You know, the challenge that we have in states like that is fighting misinformation. You know, we know from our decade plus of experience, but also the research we did, that voter ID laws, particularly because they're changing so much, cause a lot of confusion. So over half of voters in strict photo ID states didn't know they needed to bring that form of ID, and vice versa. You know, I live in D.C. where we don't have a voter ID law, and I can't tell you how many times someone says, oh, I want to vote, but I don't have an updated driver's license. I've registered to vote here, but I don't have ID,
right. And
you do not need it. So I think the power of voter ID laws to disenfranchise people indirectly because of voter intimidation and misinformation is also really something that needs to be uplifted as we think about how we can drive big turnout.
Sure. Speak to us a little bit about the voter intimidation. I know in Florida, Ron DeSantis has formed an electoral police, which, as you can imagine, is going to go about as well as everything else Ron DeSantis does, constitutionally speaking. And it is its purpose is to scare people, where they tell them, if your ID is wrong, you could be criminally liable. We could report you if we find out you have a warrant. And it's pure, unabashed, unashamed intimidation. Talk to us about how that has become a part of these voter ID laws in some of these states that are the most restrictive.
Absolutely. Voter ID laws are a particularly powerful way for hyper-partisan poll workers or election police or even a poll worker who's trained by the local election office who may have, you know, explicit or tacit bias. You know, many studies have shown that voters of color, that young people are asked for ID at higher rates than others. And a lot of people self-select and stay home because they are scared of having an unpleasant and scary experience at the polls. And that hurts me so deeply as a voting rights advocate, but particularly when I think about young people going to the polls. You know, a lot of students are really excited to cast a ballot for the first time, and it can be such an off-putting and disheartening experience when you try to do that and you're turned away, or when you feel kind of harassed when someone is like, I don't know, is that student ID card okay? I'm not sure. Because these laws are so complicated and confusing and changing, we also see a lot of poll workers who aren't even part of the election police, who don't even have a sort of, you know, scary front, just not knowing the laws and, you know, mistakenly asking people for something that they do not need. And when I think about our youngest voters, you know, we all know that you're more likely to vote if you do it the first time you can. And if you do it, it becomes a habit. It becomes part of your identity and something you do. And if you have an uncomfortable experience when you are at college in Georgia and register to vote there, but then are told your student ID doesn't work, that can be really discouraging and impact not just the current election, but whether or not you go to vote in future ones.
That's a really great point, Lauren. And I think that it's important to emphasize again, Vote Riders is nonpartisan. And as a probably one of the more conservative people that you know looks at this, I believe that the right to vote and the exercise of the franchise is fundamental if you want to preserve a republic based on democratic principles. And that closing off and sort of curating who the voters should be represents a really dark tendency in our politics right now. Okay. And that it should be something that Republicans should reject and conservatives should reject as well, because it really speaks to a more authoritarian style sort of performative democracy. Look, Saddam Hussein got reelected every 2 years with 105% of the vote. And it wasn't real. But a real democracy, and God, the whole high school, senior, college, freshman, we live in a republic. Okay, it's a republic based on democratic principles, y'all. Just breathe. But the whole idea that people want to curate and self-select who the voter pool should be, I think is anathema to a high-functioning society where we have many voices around the table, because the founders, conservatives, listen in, the founders wanted a dynamic push and pull between different competing sets of ideas. They didn't want to say, we're handing this all to one party, that's it, it's done.
Yep, absolutely. And as you rightly know, Vote Riders is a nonpartisan organization. I will push back until my last breath on any assertion that our work is anything but that. We feel very strongly that helping every eligible voter cast a ballot is patriotic. It's not partisan. Yep. And when we look at the sheer number of people impacted by voter ID laws, those people, they span political ideologies and parties. I was speaking to a group of college students from my alma mater a couple weeks ago, and I was talking about the tens of millions of voters who don't have the form of ID you increasingly need to vote and who are confused. And someone raised their hand and they were like, doesn't that affect everyone? Isn't that making it harder for everyone to vote? And why would politicians really like relentlessly pursue this? And I said, it's a great question. And yes, the answer is yes. These impact eligible voters across the country. They harm and undermine our representative democracy. And the way to build trust in elections is by making it easy to participate, by making people feel like they have access to the ballot box. They don't feel intimidated by going to the polls. And they feel confident that their ballot will count. That is the way to build trust in elections. I feel strongly we need to continually build trust in elections, but I profoundly disagree with the assertion that making it harder to vote by passing more voter ID laws is the way to build that trust.
So I have two more questions for you before we wrap up today.
I think
one of the questions is, when you help someone at Vote Riders, walk us through what the process is in any given state, and someone reaches out on the website or on socials, or that we identify them as somebody who is unable to get registered. Walk us through the process of how it, and I know it's a little different in every state. What happens when someone reaches out to vote writers and says, help, I can't get registered to vote. What do I do?
Yes, great question. So voters can contact us in a range of ways. Shameless plug, if you go to our website, votewriters.org/freehelp, you can get started. We also have a helpline. You can call or text at 866-ID-2-VOTE to ask questions about voter ID laws in your state, to request free help. So you're totally right that no state has the same voter ID law and no eligible voter has a similar path to getting an ID. So the first thing we do is take stock of where that person is at. Do they have a birth certificate and they just need us to make an appointment at the DMV and get them a ride there? Can they not track down a divorce certificate from years ago, and do they need our help intervening there? So we really work individually with every eligible voter who contacts us to understand what steps we need to take to help them get an ID to cast a ballot in their state. I really take pride in our soup to nuts approach. We cover every single cost along the way. We're grateful for a partnership with Lyft this year that lets us get people to ID offices for free. We oftentimes work with the DMV to set up sort of a 3-block hour every week, for example, where voters that we're supporting don't have to make an appointment. They can just come in. And same thing that I really love about our work that I think situates us in a very unique space in the voting rights world is that the work we do to help people get ID opens up their right to vote in the 38 states with voter ID laws, but it also has a life-changing impact. You know,
that was my next question. Say more. That was my next question.
Cut right to it. But yeah, absolutely. And I'll be honest, this is something that, you know, as someone who grew up in a world where, you know, we still needed to drive when I was 16, and I got my driver's license right after I turned 16, and having an ID has been part of my experience, and I sort of took for granted the you know, economic and transportation and time barriers that I was able to overcome to get one. But something that really, you know, opened my eyes up when I started working at Vote Writers 3 years ago is the extent to which it's crazy. In the year 2024, you need sort of this plastic card to access stable housing for your family and to access medication, to get a job in the formal sector. So one of the things I really love about our work at Vote Writers is we use our ID services as almost a Trojan horse to get us in the door, to do site-based work at food banks and shelters and, you know, organizations that are less likely to say, yes, come register voters. But when we say we want to help your community get an ID, that is front of mind. So we help people come out of crisis situations in life oftentimes and open up new opportunities to vote and live and work and thrive in a way with dignity. And I think that's something that is so special about our work. I wish there was not such an urgent need to scale our work in so many more states. But I also like to see it as an opportunity to help marginalized individuals, you know, not just have a say at the ballot box, but also live more full and equitable and just lives.
And empowered lives. Yeah,
exactly.
Lauren Kunis, thank you so much for joining us on the Lincoln Project podcast today. Tell us one more time where folks can reach Vote Writers.
You can reach Vote Writers online at voteriders.org. We welcome volunteers and donations at all levels. And of course, if you know anyone who needs help to get ID to vote, we are happy to support them along the way.
Folks, that's Vote Writers, R-I-D-E-R-S. And you cannot look for an organization that's doing more good work, I think, out in the world on something that was that a lot of people in one political party thought was a superpower to pick and choose who gets to vote. And the Vote Writers has built a sort of a tech stack and a management stack that has responded to that problem in a way that is small d democratic and profoundly American. Lauren Kunis, thank you so much for coming on the Lincoln Project podcast today. We look forward to seeing you again soon. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
good luck.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.